I get when I use my legacies. Maybe I'm looking at the essence of what makes me Lorik, what makes me Gard. Maybe I'm looking at Lorien itself. "To Lorik and a Mogadorian," the entity says at last, its appraisal of us complete. Its voice is nothing like Eight's used to be. It's like 100 voices speaking at once, all of them perfectly in tune. The flashing pools of energy where Eight's eyes used to be linger on Adam again, and the entity's lips purse in curiosity. "Except, not quite. You are something different. Something new."
Thank you," Adam replies, and takes another step backwards. Marina clears her throat and steps closer to the well. There are tears in her eyes. Her hands extend out in front of her, like she wants to grab at the entity's hand and make sure he's real.
"Eight? Is that you?"
Her voice is hard to hear over the rhythmic pulsing beneath the well. The entity turns his gaze on Marina and frowns.
"No, I am sorry, daughter. Your friend is gone."
Marina's shoulders heave with disappointment. The thing in Eight's body reaches out to comfort her, but energy crackles between them, and it ends up pulling back.
"He is with me now," the entity says soothingly. "He does me a great service, letting me speak through him. It has been a long time since I had a voice."
"Are you Lorien?" I ask, at last finding my own voice. "Are you, like, the planet?" The entity seems to consider my question. Through the thin fabric of Eight's shirt, I can see his wound light up. It glows cobalt blue like the rest of him, his entire body filled up with the energy. It's seeping out of him.
"I was called that once, yes,"
the entity says, and waves its hand at the glowing carvings on the walls.
"In other places, I was called other things. And now, on this planet, I will be called something new."
"You're a god," Marina breathes.
"No, I simply am."
I shake my head. "God or not, we need this thing's help. We don't have time for riddles. I'm suddenly really, really tired of cave drawings and prophecies and glowing people." "Do you know what's happening?" I ask Eight, Lorien, whatever it is. "The Mogadorians are invading." The entity's eyes turn once again to Adam.
"Not all of them, I see."
Adam looks uncomfortable. The entity quickly turns away. It stares up at the ceiling, and it's as if those crackling eyes can see outside of the temple.
Like it can see everything. "Yes, they are coming," the entity says, his echoing voice apparently bemused by the impending Mogadorian invasion. "Their leader has chased me for a very long time. Your elders foresaw the fall of Lorien and chose to protect me. They hid me here in hopes that it would delay him."
"It didn't go so hot," I reply. Marina elbows me. The entity's eyes slowly turn to the ceiling again. For a moment, a deep sadness passes across its face.
"So many of my children gone forever," the entity muses. "I suppose you would be the Lorik elders now, if such a thing still exists."
"We're Gard," I say, correcting this billion-year-old godlike energy force. "Because what the hell? We've come this far." "We're here for your help." The entity actually chuckles.
"It does not matter to me, daughter. Elders, guard, sepan, these words are how the Lorik chose to understand my gifts. It does not have to be that way here. It does not have to be any way."
The entity pauses thoughtfully.
"As for help, I do not know what I can offer, child.
More confusion. More riddles. I didn't think coming to the sanctuary would go like Nine had joked, that we'd unleash some massive power that would wipe out all the Mogadorians. But I expected to find something that could help. Our friends could be dying right now in the first wave of a Mogadorian invasion, and I'm down here making small talk with an annoyingly mysterious immortal. That's not good enough, I say. Frustrated, I take a step towards the entity. Energy crackles around me and I feel my hair stand up from static. Six, Adam whispers. Be careful. I ignore him, raising my voice to yell at the all-powerful Lorien. We've come far to awaken you. We lost friends. You have to be able to do something. Or are you cool if Cetricus Ra just marches down here and destroys this planet? Kills everyone on it? You're going to let that happen twice on your watch? The entity's brow furrows. A crack opens in the skin on Eight's forehead, and energy begins to spill forth. Marina covers her mouth, but manages not to cry out. It's like Eight's body is hollow inside, and the energy is gradually breaking it down. I am sorry, daughter, Eight says to Marina. This form cannot hold me for long. Then the entity turns back to me. There's no sign that my words have offended it, or had any effect at all. Its voice is as melodic and patient as ever. I do not condone the senseless destruction of life, the entity explains. But I do not choose fates. I do not judge. If it is the will of the universe that I cease to be, then I will cease. I exist merely to bestow my gifts upon those who are open to them. I spread my arms. I'm open to them. Load me up. Give me enough legacies to destroy Cetricus Ra and his fleet, and I'll leave your glowing ass alone. The entity smiles at me. More cracks form along the backs of Eight's hands. The energy is escaping. It does not work that way, it intones. Then how the hell does it work? I shout. Tell us what to do! There is nothing left to do, daughter. You have woken me and restored my strength. I am of the earth now, and so are my gifts. But how will that help us win? I yell. What was all this shit for? The entity ignores me. I guess that's all the wisdom it's willing to impart. Instead, it gazes upon Marina. He won't have long, daughter. Who won't? She replies, puzzled. Without another word, the entity's eyes close and Eight's body begins to tremble. To my surprise, the energy actually recedes from his body. The cracks along the backs of his hands stop glowing and close up, as does the one that opened across his forehead. After a few seconds, the only thing left glowing on Eight is the wound over his heart. He floats out of the column of energy and ends up right in front of Marina. When Eight opens his eyes, they don't glow. They're green, just like I remember them. Serene, but with a spark of that old mischief. Eight's lips curl into a slow smile as he sees Marina. Wow. Hi, Eight says, and when he speaks, it's with his own voice. It's him. It's really him. Marina nearly doubles over with a delighted sob. She collects herself quickly, though, and grabs Eight first by the shoulders, then on the sides of his face. She pulls him in close. You're warm, she says in wonder. You're so warm. Eight laughs easily. He puts his hand over Marina's and gently kisses the side of it. You're warm, too, he says. I'm so sorry, Eight. I'm sorry I couldn't heal you. Eight shakes his head. Stop, Marina. It's okay. You brought me here. I can't even describe it. It's amazing in there. Already, I see the energy spreading outward from Eight's heart. It races through his body, fissures opening on his arms and legs. He doesn't seem to be in any pain. He just smiles at Marina and looks at her like he's trying to memorize her face.
"Can I kiss you?" Marina asks him.
"I really wish you would." Marina kisses him, pressing in close, squeezing him. As she does, the energy swells up from within Eight and, slowly, his body begins to break apart. It's different from when a Mogadorian disintegrates. It's as if, for a moment, I can see every cell in Eight's body and see how the energy from the well glows in between each of them. One by one, those pieces of Eight dissolve, and he becomes one with the light. Marina tries to cling to him, but her fingers pass right through the energy. And then he's gone. The light flows back to the well and recedes deep under the ground. The heartbeat we triggered grows fainter. I can still hear it, but only if I really listen. The chamber is peaceful again, lit only by the glowing laurelite carvings on the wall. I feel fresh air on my back and turn around to see that a door has opened up in the wall. It leads to a staircase, sunlight coming in from the outside. Marina collapses against me, a sobbing wreck. I hug her close and try not to break down myself. Adam watches us without staring too hard and wipes at something in the corner of his eye. "We should go," Adam says quietly. "The others will need our help." I nod at him. I wonder if we even accomplished anything down here. It was beautiful seeing Eight again, even for a few fleeting moments. Yet my conversation with the intergalactic entity that grants us our legacies sure didn't yield a lot of answers. Meanwhile, the time until a Mogadorian invasion is probably running out, if it hasn't already. Marina squeezes my arm. I look down at her.
"I saw it, Six," Marina whispers to me. "When I kissed him, I saw inside the thing. Lorien, the energy, whatever you want to call it."
"Okay," I say, wanting to be gentle with her but not sure we have time for this. "And?" Marina grins at me.
"It's spreading, Six. Through the earth. It's spreading everywhere."
"What does that mean?" Adam asks.
"It means," Marina says, wiping her face and standing up straight, "that we aren't alone anymore."
Chapter 30 Skyscrapers burn. We run. The Mogadorian warship crawls across New York's skyline, its massive energy cannons bombarding the blocks indiscriminately. The warship already disgorged dozens of armed scout ships, the smaller vessels zipping up and down the avenues, ferrying warriors to the ground, where they blast whatever civilians they come across. Other things leap down from the ship, too. Hungry, angry things. I haven't seen any yet. I've only heard their terrible howls rising above the explosions. Piken. New York City is lost. That much I know for sure. There's no turning back the Mogadorians at this point. I have no idea how the other cities where Mogadorian warships were spotted are doing. The network is down in New York, and my satellite phone sunk to the bottom of the East River. All we can do is run, just like I've been doing my entire life. Except now, unfortunately, there are a million people running with me. "Run!" I shout at anyone we come across. "Run until you can't see their ships! Survive, regroup, and we will fight them!" Sam is with me. His face is ashen, and he looks like he's going to be sick. He never saw what the Mogadorians did to Lorien. He's been through some hard times with us, but never anything like this. I think he always believed that we would win. He never thought this day would come. I've let him down. I don't know where 9 and 5 are. There aren't any new scars burning their way across my ankle. So they haven't killed each other. Yet. I lost Agent Walker, too. She and her agents are on their own. I hope they make it out alive. If they do, maybe they'll be smart enough to meet us back at Ashwood Estates. If Sam and I can even make it that far. We run down the streets filled with smoke, darting around overturned cars, climbing over fallen chunks of buildings. When one of the scout ships cruises by, we duck into alleys or hide in doorways. I could fight them. With all the anger I'm holding on to, I'm sure I could rip through them in no time. I could easily take down one of the scout ships on my own. But I'm not on my own. There are about 20 survivors following me and Sam. A family I pulled off a burning balcony with my telekinesis, a pair of blood-splattered NYPD officers who saw me take down a pair of Moog warriors, a group that came out from hiding in a restaurant when I flashed my lumen inside, and others still. I can't save everyone in this city, but I'll do what I can. That means not picking fights with the Mogadorians, at least not until I can get these people to safety. I avoid trouble wherever I can. It isn't always possible. We cross an intersection where slashed power lines are draped across the burned husk of a city bus, and we run right into a dozen Mogadorian warriors. They bring their blasters around on us, but I blow them back with a fireball before they can squeeze off any shots. The ones who aren't immediately incinerated get popped by the cops standing behind me. I look over my shoulder, nodding to the officers. Nice shooting!
We got your back, John Smith,
one of them says. I don't even think to ask how he knows my name. Our group runs a few more blocks before I'm drawn to the sound of nearby screaming. Around the corner, we find a young couple trying to escape from their burning apartment building via the fire escape. The bolts look like they've come unmoored from the wall near the roof, and now the whole fire escape hangs like a crooked finger over the street. Still 5 stories up, the guy has fallen over the railing. His girlfriend desperately tries to pull him back over the side. Sarah's face flashes into my mind. Just stay alive, I think. Survive this and we'll be together. I'm going to make it back to her. I run towards the fire escape, bracing it from a distance with my telekinesis.
Let go!
I shout up at the couple. I'll catch you!
Are you friggin' nuts?
The guy yells back. None of us have time to argue, so I reach out with my telekinesis and just yank the couple off the fire escape. As I'm lowering them to the ground, I hear the beats of heavy footfalls bearing down on me.
John!
Sam screams.
Look out!
I turn my head. It's a piken. The beast gallops towards me at full speed, its jaws covered with slobber, its razor-sharp teeth bared. I hear screams from my group. The cops take some shots at the monster, but they don't even slow it down. The others have the good sense to run from the rabid Mogadorian beast. Except, the direction they run in puts them right beneath the fire escape, which, of course, chooses that exact moment to tear fully away from its building and come clattering down into the street. I've still got the couple suspended in the air, and now I'm holding up the fire escape with my telekinesis, too. I try to divide my focus enough to turn on my lumen, but it's just too much. I'm too exhausted. The strain is more than I can manage. The piken is almost on top of me. Sarah's face flashes again to the forefront of my mind. I have to try. I grit my teeth and dig down deeper. With a massive woof, a wave of telekinetic force hits the piken and knocks it into the air. The beast's muscular legs flail wildly. It lands back first on top of a stop sign. the pole impaling the beast right